Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. It's Monday, March 20, 2023, live to be broadcast on Wednesday, March 22nd, 2023, on 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut, and it's getting more and more beautiful as the season progresses. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also check out my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at Fran Storch ND.
Google us.
Yes, I have a great presence on Google. If you Google Fran Storch, I have a lot of presence. I have a lot of hits. So my office comes up, my shows come up in a lot of different locations. Happy spring equinox. Oh, the views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Okay, now I'll say it. Happy spring equinox. Enjoy the lengthening days. Get out in the sun. Get some exercise outdoors. Plant some seeds indoors or outdoors. It is very sunny today, but it's very chilly today as well. So I'd say bundle up and get outside, because all of the great reasons why sunshine is good for you, it's a good idea. Today, where we live, I don't know if it's different places, but the equinox here in Mansfield Center, Connecticut, will be happening at 5:24 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. So I imagine that, you know, the equinox is a worldwide event, because it's a point in the Earth's orbit where the Earth, where there's an exact point in the orbit where that it hits, and it happens at a specific time. So I'm assuming it happens the same time all over the world. Therefore, it's happening at 5:24 here. And if you're in this time zone, it's happening at 5:24. And if you're in Newfoundland, it's happening at 6:54, because they have an hour and a half time zone. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah, they do. And if you're in Nova Scotia, it'll be happening at 6:24. And if you're in Chicago, it'll be happening at 4:24. So anyway, it's going to happen on the 24, depending where you are in the world. Unless you have a half-hour time zone, in which case it will be happening on the 54. But it's the same time all over the world because, as I said, it is a specific point in the Earth's orbit. And it is today. And right now it's still winter. And at 5:24 p.m. here in Eastern Daylight Time, it will be spring. And that's astronomical spring as opposed to meteorological spring. Meteorological spring began on March 1st. Because there are 3 month cycles of meteorological. So meteorological spring is March, April, May. Meteorological summer is June, July, August. Meteorological fall is September, October, November. And meteorological winter is December, January, February. It makes sense because it's the cluster of temperature as opposed to the actual astronomical events. When you're talking about the equinoxes and the solstices, you're talking about a point in the Earth's orbit. When you're talking about meteorological seasons, you're talking about a cluster of air temperature. That was my understanding. They explained it to me on the meteorologist on the TV explained it to me. So that's kind of cool. All right. So what do you want to talk about? I don't think we've talked about yet the deal with daylight savings time, why it's a deal. I know we switched to it last weekend. And I think I'm pretty much caught up. I don't know if I am 100%. How do you feel?
With the dad?
Catching up.
So. Pretty good. I think I'm back.
But... Well, because you have a week off of teaching, so you don't have to get up super early, so you can sleep until you don't feel like sleeping anymore.
And then there's that.
Yes. And tonight you're going to be up late because UConn made it to the... what do you call it? The Super 32 or the 32 woohoo or what do you call it?
What?
The game tonight. It's there in it's
they're,
the 32. It's the,
they're shooting for the Sweet 16 tonight.
Well, I know, but it's called the Super 32 or woohoo 32
know.
Or
no.
Yeah.
I don't know what the 32 is called.
Yes.
I didn't think it had a name.
But nobody Cinderella'd them, so they are advancing to the and they're playing who tonight? They're playing Alabama. Yes.
They are playing Baylor.
Baylor. Season. I knew that. Right. They're playing Baylor. So the UConn women are playing Baylor tonight. And that will be very interesting.
I will be there.
and you're going to gamble.
I'm going to be there.
And I'm going to be in
there. 9 o'clock.
Yes, and 9 o'clock I will be in my pajamas and snuggled up in my bed, which is how I like it on a Monday night because I have to work the next day. So I'll look for you in the audience. That'll be fine. If I were younger and didn't have to work tomorrow, I would go with you. But, you know. Okay. Yeah. So let's talk about why the deal with daylight savings time, why it makes you feel not so good. I know that that first morning, it just really doesn't work. I mean, they put it on a Saturday night. So people who have ordinary jobs where they don't have to get up early for something on the weekend, it's not that big of a deal. So they manage to catch up. But that Monday morning is an issue. The time change can make people feel pretty bad for a few days and even increase the risk of heart attack in some cases. When you spring forward an hour, your circadian rhythm is impacted and it can affect your health. So if you get a case of the serious Mondays following daylight savings time, there's medical evidence for it. We're losing an hour of sleep by springing ahead, it screws up our circadian clock, the clock, our internal clock that senses what time it is as in terms of what the sun is doing during the day. So Jay Puanco, who's a neurologist that specializes in sleep medicine at Pickup Family Neurosciences in Newport Beach, California, says, don't underestimate the importance of sleep and that the brain needs a little prep time to get used to the new schedule. When you have poor sleep, you crave higher calorie foods, you may snack unhealthfully, and you want more fast food, so greasy, fatty, sugary, starchy, right? You don't feel like exercising as much, and that combination leads to poor judgment, you're not as productive, you get cranky, and when you're sleep deprived, it can lead to a lot of physical illnesses. So this is general sleep deprivation. And not everybody's affected the same way. Some people aren't even affected at all. And because we're losing an hour of sleep, you might feel tired because of the change. But for some, it may not mean much. For others, it can cause harm. There is an increased risk of heart attack and workplace injuries due to lack of sleep and even traffic accidents. And hospitals will tell you that there's more hospitalizations due to stroke at this change this spring ahead. So why do we even do it? Of more concern are some studies that have shown
last week.
I know there's shown that there's an increase in heart attacks following daylight savings time. The Dr. Sabaro Myla, who directs cardiac cath labs at Hogue Memorial Hospital Presbyterian, says they're not sure what's causing the increase in heart attacks. It usually occurs on the spring forward Monday. So we made it because it was a week ago. That heart attack occurrences may increase dramatically that day. The variation is because of how people define this heart attack population. So they only count certain types of heart attack care, such as angioplasty stent, and not necessarily taking into account all heart attack treatment. That there was a two-year long study on that topic, and there was a 50% increase in heart attack on the spring forward Monday. We took into account all kinds of heart attack treatment, from medical management to angioplasty stent and bypass. And there's been shown that there's a decrease in heart attacks in the fall after daylight savings time ends. So, but that's because you've gotten an extra hour of sleep, and, you know, getting an extra hour of sleep can be really helpful. You know, taking a nap during the middle of the day can be really helpful. Getting more rest is really helpful. Getting less rest is unhelpful. We talk about that a lot. There's more stress because you're adjusting to a new routine. You're not sleeping as much. That can reduce concentration. There's a rhythm disturbance, and your blood pressure can rise. And you also can get thicker blood. You become more coagulable. If you time out when heart attacks most commonly occur, it's usually between 5 and 7 a.m. At that time of day, your platelet activity increases and your blood sugar rises. Your blood sugar is probably rising because your cortisol cycle peaks first thing in the morning at around 7 a.m. As your cortisol rises, your blood sugar rises. As your blood sugar rises, you become more coagulable. Your platelets become more sticky. The more sugar there is in your blood, they are more likely to stick together. So your cortisol peaks in the morning in order to wake you up so you can be productive in the early part of the day. And the way we work in the United States is we're expected to work really hard, you know, from morning till evening. And our cortisol doesn't work that way. Our cortisol is highest in the morning, and it gradually slides down in a stepwise fashion over the course of the day. So your cortisol is lower at 10 o'clock than it is at 7. It's lower at noon than it is at 10. And it keeps going down until 5 o'clock. You really shouldn't. And that's why you get that 2:30 feeling, you know, that where you feel like tired in the middle of the day, you know, in the middle of the afternoon, because your cortisol's dropped way down by then. And it's a good idea if you want to have any energy. It's a good idea to take a rest at that time. And a lot of people don't. And they feel exhausted later in the day, unfortunately. But your cortisol is highest in the morning. And cortisol's job is to run around your body, break down tissue, to put sugar into your blood so you have energy to do whatever. To, you know, do the laundry, get up and do your exercise, get up and get ready for work, get up and do your work. So your platelet activity is going to be increased. And if it's increased, you have more coagulation and stuff is more likely to get stuck in your coronary arteries, unfortunately. So that's what happens. So if you have an increased stressor, like you're having to get up an hour earlier, and it's a full hour. It's not like it's 10 minutes or 5 minutes or something like that. It's a full hour, which is a long time. Think about how much better you feel if you close your eyes for 20 minutes or if you do some stretching for 20 minutes. 20 minutes is a long enough time to make a difference in how you feel. So a whole hour less of sleep is problematic. I mean, it's a long time. Like I said, a 20-minute power nap is a wonderful thing. A 20-minute stretch is a wonderful thing. 20 minutes of yoga is a wonderful thing. 20 minutes yoga nidra, guided meditation, anything is a wonderful thing. An hour of any of those things is also wonderful. So the reverse is true. If you take that away, if you take away the ability to rest, it's definitely going to make an impact on how you feel and on some health parameters. So if you want to try to feel better during daylight savings time, one of the things you can do is to turn on lights if you're awakening early enough to be in darkness, and turning on the same light as soon as it gets dark, so you can make these time changes, transitions sooner. The light cues can help your body get used to the new schedule faster. So you want it to be light when you want to get up, and that's why. And you can use full spectrum lights that gradually turn on to mimic dawn for the time that you want to wake up, even if it's still dark when you need to wake up. And it doesn't bother some people at all. I mean, if you're lucky enough that you don't have to work on Sundays and that you can rest on that Sunday, you can just get extra sleep and just get extra rest and then see if you can go to bed an hour earlier and gradually transition to it over the course of the week. What I did that week, you know, I had scheduled myself for a meetup on Zwift. So I had an 8 o'clock meetup that morning. So it was really, my body thought it was 7 o'clock. So I just did it. And I probably did not do it the way you should really do it. But I feel okay now. I think in another week, I'll feel more okay. I had very busy weeks the last couple of weeks. Usually I have some downtime on Wednesdays, and I didn't have as much downtime the last two Wednesdays, and I will have more this Wednesday. So that's kind of a relief, and that gives me a break in the middle of the busy week. I'll probably get back into it a little bit quicker. Getting rest has become so important to me. I just don't do as many things because I need to rest in order to be able to be at my best for work. So at Vanderbilt Sleep Disorders, they say it's important to get enough rest around the time change, but you also don't want to become stressed about your heart attack risk because that makes you more likely to have one. So go to bed and wake up 15 minutes earlier, starting a few days before the time change. That's great advice. Who does that? I mean, you tend to, you know, do your schedule. But, I mean, if you can do it, it's great. It's great advice. Try going to bed and waking up 15 minutes early, starting a few days before the time change, and then add another 15 minutes earlier the day before the time change. Then you have a little bit more, it's not so abrupt. Yeah, and then you have a little bit more control over it. So the time change can make you feel icky, but there are some steps you can use to make you feel better. So that's good news. Here's some So here is some information about why ditching it would be healthier for everyone. There's some people who think that we just shouldn't have daylight savings time anymore. And this is a recent article. So every spring, we shift our clocks forward by an hour for daylight savings time, unless you live in Arizona. And the other state where they don't do daylight, they don't change time is...
Illinois?
It might be Hawaii. Please look that up. It's not Illinois. No, it's definitely Arizona because we've been there. Because when you go on the border to Arizona, and, you know, we usually go, when we were going to Arizona, we were going in September, and we were coming from Nevada. So we were crossing the border there, and it would say Eastern Daylight Time, 4 o'clock, and Arizona time, it would be 5 o'clock, right? Because it's an hour. Arizona is technically in mountain. It's Arizona time, but it's technically mountain time. So it's mountain standard time. That then they stay in mountain standard time. So if you're in Arizona, it's always the same time there. So when I have to call Stephanie, my girlfriend who lives in Flagstaff, sometimes she's 2 hours from me and sometimes she's 3 hours from me. So I think right now it's 3 hours later there.
All right.
3 hours earlier there, yes.
You ready for the results?
Yeah.
Hawaii,
yeah.
Most of Arizona, not all. Puerto Rico, the U.S. Virgin Islands, Northern Mariana Islands, Guam, and American Samoa.
Right, so in the South Pacific, the American territories in the South Pacific, they don't do daylight. And I didn't realize that Puerto Rico didn't do it as well.
Yeah, Puerto Rico also.
Hawaii, it is Hawaii as well.
Yep.
What else?
It says most of Arizona.
Most of that's because the reses do daylight savings time. It's the reservations.
Yeah.
Yep. That's what it is. Yeah. And that's something I happen to know.
Okay.
Yeah. The reservations they do daylight savings time, whereas most of Arizona does that. Like, Stephanie, she's in Flagstaff and Prescott. And So right now in Prescott, what time is it here? It is it's 20 after 10, so it is 20 after 7 in the morning there. But so for 4 months of the year, it's 2 hours earlier where Stephanie is, and for most of the year, because we do 9 months of this daylight savings time.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of sleep experts call for it to be abolished, and a gradual sleep schedule change leading up to the time change can help to minimize the effects. March 12th, most of the United States sprang forward, adjusted their clocks, and later this year, on November 5th, we'll fall back again. I thought that there was a bill to abolish daylight savings time. I guess that hasn't gone through.
I haven't heard anything about it.
It's been going on for decades now. Scientists realize that any benefit that it provides may be outweighed by the negative effects on health and human safety. So, there's a doc at Case Western Reserve University who specializes in sleep medicine, said the time change associated with daylight savings time causes us to lose sleep for about a week until we adapt to the change. So while we're going through the adjustment period, it can put our health and safety at risk. It's been shown to result in an increase in car accidents, and there can be an approximately 20% increase in patient safety-related incidents associated with human error. And also an increased link to heart attack, stroke, and also atrial fibrillation. And it's because circadian rhythm researchers add that some studies show an increase in workplace accidents. It also can lead to mood disturbances such as cyber loafing and reduced productivity. In other words, if you're at your job, you might just spend time dawdling on the internet instead of doing your work. So why? It's because it changes your circadian clock, and it plays a critical role in regulating your sleep and wakefulness. It's influenced your exposure to light and darkness. It causes issues because people usually wake up at a set time, and then when they have to wake up at what is effectively earlier, and it's also darker, that means the delicate balance of circadian rhythm is disrupted. There have been calls to abolish daylight savings time. On March 9, 2022, the Consumer Protection and Commerce Subcommittee of the House Energy and Commerce Committee held a hearing on it, with panel experts speaking about its effects on health and safety. And experts said they support the move to do away with it. And there are organizations that in favor of this. There's a 2020 position statement endorsed by many medical and scientific and civic organizations that standard time is more aligned with our natural circadian rhythm and more conducive to public health and safety. The only thing about standard, so if you we had standard time, what that means is that, let me see, there are going to be times in the winter, if it's always standard time, and you don't, so if it's always standard time, then it's never going to get super, oh, I don't know, you're just, if it's always standard time, then you're going to, you're never going to get those, it's not going to get dark. It's not going to be light real late. Like we have twilight to almost 9 o'clock in the summer. You're just not going to have that. You're going to have twilight to almost 8 o'clock instead, which is probably a good trade-off because it'll be lighter in the morning. If you keep it at daylight savings time, then you're going to have some very dark mornings when it's daylight savings time. Like you're going to have, the sun is going to rise in the 8 o'clock hour because it rises in the 7 o'clock hour during standard time, right? So if it's always daylight savings time, you're going to have the sun rising at 8 o'clock. So I think it's, if you're going to switch to one, I think it's better to put it at standard time. It's better to have the light in the morning than it is to have the light in the evening. I mean, in the evening, it's really better because our cortisol, our body cycles are such that our cortisol, as I said, it's highest in the morning and it's light in the morning and we are diurnal creatures and we're more productive in the morning. So it makes sense to have more light in the morning and less light in the evening, and then you can wind down. Because what I'm noticing is that with the sun setting so late, I feel like the day isn't over and I should do more stuff. And it's probably not good for me. I should probably be winding down, even though it's light out. But you tend to want to be more productive when it's light out. It's like, okay, I can get one more task done. I don't have to settle down yet. And yet, then I find that I'm losing my rest. So if we're going to pick one, I think it should be standard time, not daylight savings time. So we need the light in the morning. We need the light in the morning because that's when we're productive and active, and it makes people more likely to exercise in the morning, and it's going to make people feel better in the morning. Getting up in the dark is not a good thing. It's not natural. It's not what our bodies want to do. And so that daylight savings time is antiquated and not sleeper circadian friendly. And that daylight savings time is not worth the health risks that people have a late owl chronotype who stay up late and get up late, never really adjust completely to daylight savings time. So there may be some individuals at higher risk of metabolic disease. So again, if you want to minimize the risk, you want to start to adjust your schedule a few days earlier, going to bed 15 minutes earlier and rising 15 minutes earlier. Just shifting your schedule a few days earlier. So a good thing to do, you know, probably midweek, Wednesday, the Wednesday before, you want to start doing that and then move it to half an hour on Friday and Saturday. And then just if you can get extra rest on Sunday. This is really hard for people who work on the weekend because they don't really get to get that extra rest on Sunday. So anyway, so that's the deal with daylight savings time. Let me see if there's one more thing, if there's anything interesting in this. Marco Rubio reintroduced legislation that would make daylight savings time permanent, which I don't agree with. So it was the Sunshine Protection Act. It passed unanimously in the Senate last year, but the bill stalled in the House. Senator Rubio reintroduced the bill in the Senate on March 2nd to end the antiquated practice. Again, if you're going to do it, I don't think it should be daylight savings time. It should be permanent standard time. As it approaches, so why do we even have daylight savings time? When the clocks move 1 hour ahead every spring, it adds an hour of sunlight to the end of the day. Historians trace the origins to World War I as countries used the change to save power and fuel. It's not about the farmers. It's about industrialization. Farmers don't care. They do whatever they need to do.
When it's light out.
Exactly. Right. And they don't care what time it is. Exactly. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if it's, you know, they just, it's what you said. You get up, you make hay when the sun shines.
Right.
And so it doesn't matter what time it is. So if it's daylight savings time or not, you just get up at the same time, regardless of what time it is. I mean, we should ask Brian and Anita what time, you know, how they function around the sun. They just function around the sun. They don't care exactly what time it is.
Yeah.
I mean, they turn the clocks, but it doesn't have that much meaning. So daylight savings time was abolished after the war, after World War I, but it became standard practice by 1966 after the passage of the Uniform Time Act, and only two states, Hawaii and Arizona, don't observe it. And then, of course, all the Puerto Rico and those Pacific Island territories. So, because it doesn't matter as much. If you're in the South Pacific and you're near the equator, the you don't gain that much by changing time. When you go to Florida, same thing. When my mother is in a subtropical place, if I go there, you know, in May, the sun sets earlier there than it sets here. But it also rises reasonably early, and you get plenty of sunshine throughout the day. The change in day length is not nearly as pronounced the closer you get to the equator. So it doesn't really matter. Is the U.S. going to stop daylight savings time? It's still in limbo. Senator Rubio introduced the Sunshine Protection Act in the Senate, and Buchanan did in the House, but there's no certainty whether it will pass once again or be hindered. It's interesting because Rubio is in Florida, where it doesn't matter that much. So I don't know why he would have done that.
Yeah.
But it's not a bad thing. Again, I don't think it should be kept to daylight time. But see, if he keeps it to daylight time, then the sun sets later in Florida, which is good for commerce down there. It is good for commerce because people will tend to stay up later if it's lighter out.
Yeah, they'll stay out late at night and go to restaurants.
And, exactly. You know. And Florida's a vacation place. So it's to their advantage to have it be only daylight time.
Yeah.
But health-wise, I don't think that's good. We live in New England, and in New England, we like to be industrious. And when you want to be industrious, you want it to be light in the morning. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you want to settle down when it gets dark at night. And the nation was going to observe permanent daylight savings time for 2 years, but the trial was cut short because parents were worried about early morning traffic accidents when kids were commuting to school in the winter. Exactly. That's my point. When you have the sun rising in the 8 o'clock hour in most of the country, I didn't think about that. It's definitely going to mess up people who have to be at work in the morning, but it's also going to mess up kids who have to be in school. And that, you know, if you have teenagers, bad enough they have to be at school at 7:30 in the morning, and then you flip them to daylight savings time, they're just going to be, the first part of the morning will be wasted because they'll all be asleep. So last year there were 450 bills considered across state legislators that would make daylight savings time year-round if a federal law passes, but there seems to be a partisan push to make the change permanent, a bipartisan push to make it permanent. Some experts say that it could harm Americans, that there are great advantages to making standard time permanent as opposed to daylight savings time. That's what I say. Implementing a permanent switch to savings daylight savings time would harm our bodies because it would increase the differences between the social clock and the body clock. Doing so is associated with decreased life expectancy, shortened sleep, cause mental and cognitive problems, and contribute to the many sleep disturbances. So many sleep disturbances. I see so many patients who have sleep disturbances. My take is I think that if we're going to do away with daylight savings time, we should go to permanent standard time, not daylight savings time. That's what I think. Okay, then we talk about what happens to kids when they don't get enough sleep. So there was a study that showed that 39 minutes of sleep can make or break your child's health, happiness, and school day. So one of the keys to keeping your kid healthy and happy is to make sure they get consistent sleep, right? And that makes sense. There was a study that was published in JAMA, Network Open. And in the study, researchers monitored 100 children ages 8 to 12 living in New Zealand. The children alternated between a week of going to bed 1 hour earlier and 1 hour later, with 1 week at normal time in between the two. Then they had a questionnaire, and the children and the parents rated their sleep disturbances and impairment during the day. Researchers also administered a survey to the children about their health-related quality of life. The kids who participated in the study regularly slept between 8 and 11 hours a night and were considered generally healthy. So these are healthy children that they study, not kids who had something wrong with them that affected their sleep. After 1 week of receiving 39 minutes less of sleep per night, the children reported lower overall well-being and ability to cope at school, the study said. We all know that we feel better with a good night's sleep. There's a shock. But there are very few data using experimental designs that show it, how big the impact might be. This sort of interventional data is the only way we can prove that changing one behavior actually does affect another. So it covered a lot of aspects of well-being, an assessment of how the children felt physically, psychologically, in their relationships with parents and peers, and how they felt about school. The assessment included questions about whether the kids felt they were able to pay attention at school and felt physically fit, and whether they had energy to have fun and spend time with their friends. Not all children were able to cut back their sleep the full hour in the study, but whatever amount they reduced caused a decline in their well-being. Shocking, hey? We always knew that not getting enough sleep is bad for you, but now here's a study on kids who don't get enough sleep, and we show that, guess what? It's bad for you.
Yeah.
We haven't seen this type of study look at health-related quality of life or quality of life outcomes, which we know are important because it's something that can really resonate with families, teachers, public health officials. So it's really important to know. You need to prioritize sleep. For kids and you, but we're talking about kids. We happen to be talking about kids right now. They were monitored from July 4th to September 1st, 2022. And there's questions about the longer term impacts. We don't know what the long term effect might be. Maybe children adapt. Maybe they don't. And maybe their well-being worsens even more. And so we just want to make you understand that you don't want to underestimate the value of sleep and to prioritize it as much as possible. But don't brush off a little lost sleep. Then there are children who have neurodevelopmental differences like autism or ADHD. They vary in sleep needs or work or activity schedules may make it hard to be in bed as early as you like or your child would be. If your kid could benefit from more sleep, you want to start out small, like maybe moving the bedtime back by 15 minutes. 15 minutes is the rule of thumb. You could do anything for 15 minutes, kind of. Well, maybe not a headstand. But some people can. I can't do a headstand for 15 minutes. I can barely
pass out after a while.
You can barely do a headstand at all. So sleep quality. You want to have restful sleep. The same bedtime every night. Turn off screens 30 minutes before bed. Follow a bedtime routine. Calming activities. So some kids need to dance or stretch to get their bodies ready. Some families may want to do bath, reading books, reading to your children. Older kids can benefit from following a schedule that alerts the brain and body that it's time to settle in. If you concentrate more on sleep, so if you're older, you maybe want to, I'm a big fan of reading books on paper before you go to sleep, or listening to healing music before you go to sleep, and doing something that's not looking at a screen, because looking at a screen, it sucks you in, and it's very stimulating to your nervous system. When you're looking at screens, you're looking at pixels, and the pixels that you're looking at, you're having to resolve and approximate together. It's very different than looking at a static object. So I have found it very relaxing to read a paper book. And if you're concerned about the amount of paper that's out there, then you can just go to the library. Go to the library and take out a book and bring it back and then get another one. And then you're supporting your local library, which is an invaluable resource. Has wonderful books. They're always happy to see you. They're happy if you found something good to read. And it's a great resource for all kinds of stuff. I didn't realize there's other things you can take out of the library, like pots and pans.
Yeah, there are. Yeah.
You'd think, why would you want a pot or pan from the library? Well, what they usually have there is funny shaped pots and pans. So if you want to make a special cake that's shaped like a star or a pumpkin, you can get a pan that's shaped like that and you can make a funny shaped cake.
Okay.
I didn't realize that. Yeah, I know. There's odd things that you can take out of the library. And of course, there's videos and movies and things that you can rent. Not rent, take out, you know, check out and then bring back. But I'm old school. I go there for books. And if they don't have the book you want at your local library, libraries are connected to many libraries in the state. It's quite likely that somebody in the chain has it and you can ask them to get it for you. And then they transport it from wherever the book is sitting. So I remember I wanted a book that didn't reside at my library or it wasn't available. And they brought it in from Enfield. So because the library network is very large. So I thought that was a great thing. So, all right. So if you concentrate more on sleep, many other aspects of children's health and well-being are greatly improved. One of the things that I do here is I have parents come in and the kids are addicted to video games or they're addicted to their phones and tablets and they stay up either communicating with their friends who are in other locations or they play video games and they play them late into the night and for some reason the parents let them do it. So they stay up way too late and then they don't get enough sleep and they're tired and they don't function or perform as well, especially if they have neurological deficits or learning disabilities. And if you have a neurological challenge, such if you're in the spectrum, so whether you have ADHD or you have autism, you know, actual autism spectrum, tablets really tend to suck people in the spectrum in because they really suck in your attention. I will have I'll talk to Ron. Ron will be sitting with his tablet, staring at it. I'll speak to him, and he doesn't have too much trouble with the volume of his hearing. I think he does a little bit, but not excessively. But I'll speak to him in a voice where if I were that close to him and he wasn't looking at a device, he would be able to hear me. And I'll say something to him. He'll be into his tablet and he won't hear me. All of his attention is on the tablet. Even though, and it's not that his ears aren't registering the sound, it's that his brain, all of the attention on his brain is on the tablet. If he comes in and he watches a TV show that I have on in the room and I know that he's looking at it for a second and I know that he has something that he has to get done, and I'll turn off the TV to break it because he won't stop looking at it until like he needs a nudge to get him away from it because he has ADHD, you know. So the one of the things you think about for ADHD. Okay, so here's a couple of random items. I just went into health news to find some random tidbits. And I know I was going to talk about cardiovascular disease, but I just felt like looking at the health news and seeing what was out there and to find anything interesting. So there's a thing called an everything shower. So what is an everything shower? It's first of all, it's on TikTok. So if it's on TikTok, it must be good. But, you know, enjoy TikTok now because it looks like TikTok might be going away. And, you know, the federal government is looking at getting rid of TikTok because they're concerned that, China's getting our information. So I don't know if we're going to continue to have TikTok or unless they sell their stock in it.
Not getting our information from Google?
Excuse me? Oh, absolutely.
I mean, come on.
That is true.
Give it a break.
That is true. But the thing, so the argument is that the information that they're getting from TikTok is so that they can spy on people. The information they're getting from Google is so that they can advertise to you. That's the difference. That it's really just to get your information so they know what ads to send you. And it's advertised. Anyway, that's what they say. It's probably not right either way.
No.
So when you get into the shower at the end of a stressful day, I don't generally shower at the end of the day. I mean, I might shower after a workout, which then might be later in the day, but otherwise I don't generally shower. But anyway, if you want to, you could do the everything shower. So what's an everything shower? It's not just about washing. It includes a lot of self-care stuff. So you can put on a deep conditioning mask on your hair. So I do hair masks in the shower. I don't, and I tend not to wash my hair on, you know, when you're my age, you don't need to wash your hair every day because it doesn't get that dirty, doesn't get that oily. Tend to put it up at work anyway. So I wash my hair a couple times a week and I wash them not on days that I have patient care. And so I have the time. I definitely use a hair mask. And, you know, hair masks generally smell pretty. And, you know, they make your hair a little softer and take out some of the frizz. I don't know what you think of my frizz situation here. I've got product in it to make it a little less frizzy. So there's things that you can do. Put on a hair mask. Put a luxurious cleanser on your skin. Shave, exfoliate from head to toe. That's the funny thing because, I mean, I don't take long showers, but I do a lot of that stuff. I have two body washes that I use. One is like a natural-based scrub that has, biologically friendly granules in it that's a bit exfoliating and moisturizing. And then I have just a moisturizing body wash that I use after that. And, you know, most days I do both of them. And then I have a special face wash. And then I have regular bar soap that cleans the smellier bits, let's say.
The
smellier bits. Yes, your armpits, your privates,
Okay.
Yeah. So I tend to use a washcloth with soap for that stuff. So I have a lot of products in my shower. So on a day that I'm not washing my hair, I'm using bar soap. I'm using exfoliating scrub. And it's gentle exfoliating scrub. If you want to use an extremely exfoliating, like a sugar scrub, I wouldn't do that every day because it's irritating, you know, so do that on alternate days. But a gentle scrub that has very fine granules in it, make sure they're biodegradable, that they can go in the septic or that they are going to be healthful if they go into the environment. So they have to be like sand or it can still be sugar because sugar will dissolve. And so I'll use that daily and I use the moisturizing body wash. And then I have a face wash. I have a special face wash that I use and I alternate brands and types depending what I find out there. So I love to go to certain stores and find face washes, and sometimes I just get something from the health food store or from my distributors. So I have a mini spa treatment every time I get in the shower, and it's nice to do that for yourself. You can also get essential oils. Get a spray with essential oils in it, like lavender. I love lavender and rose. Ron has a soap that has eucalyptus in it that probably has some essential oil benefits for him as well, some healing benefits. And the thing is, it's this Everything Shower is so popular on TikTok. It's a lot of self-care rituals. It helps with stress management, helps with your mood, and it's part of their weekly wind-down routine. But I mean, you could also take a bath, and baths are very relaxing too, because the nice thing about a bath, especially one that has nice calming essential oils and healing bath salts in it, and candles and stuff, is that you're sitting still. I like the part about the bath that you're sitting still. So routines have a positive effect on your well-being. So Tanya Taylor, who's a clinical hypnotherapist and psychotherapist, saying it's not about the lotions and potions, but it's about the ritual. You're doing a ritual of self-care. And self-care is really helpful. I also submit that when you do a ritual that includes healing essential oils, the scent of the healing essential oils is calming to you. And great healing essential oils. Lavender and rose are two of my favorites. I find them very peaceful and calming. Lavender has a very cleansing effect. Rose is my favorite floral. Not everybody likes it, but I happen to love it. I love it when the wild roses bloom. And the magical thing about those wild roses that bloom at the roadside, they're an invasive species. I think it's not Rosa rugosa. I forget the species. Rosa rugosa is the rose on the beach, I think. But this rose makes an incredible scent. I have tried to harvest the petals. The petals are white and they're shaped like little hearts. And I've tried to make an extract with them, you know, put the petals into oil to capture that rose scent. And I can't do it. I have not been able to do it. When you pull when you pull the petals off the plant, they no longer smell. And when you put them in the oil, they don't capture the scent. So it's one of those ephemeral things that you're forced to go outside and experience while it's happening. There's something really beautiful about that. So if I want to have rose and smell it at other times, like not when I'm outside, I have a brand of believe it or not, facial toner that's rose scented, that smells wonderful. It's got natural rose scent in it. So I'm able to have that all year round. And you can also buy rose water. The rose facial toner, I think because the rose is captured in, it's captured in witch hazel, it tends to capture the rose scent. So it stays very fresh. Rose water I've purchased before, and rose water is just, you know, rose oil in the water. It goes bad after a while, so you have to use it. And I don't necessarily use it that fast. But I'm trying to use my rose toner more because I enjoy it so much. I do a lot of yoga in my bedroom, and I have a beautiful lavender spray. So I'll spray that in the room as well as the rose spray, and I find that very healing. I also happen to have something that a guy who helps me with healing sometimes told me about. David Woolley told me about this. And what it is, it's smokeless smudge. To smudge, what you do is what you're going to do is take one of the sacred herbs, one or more of the sacred herbs, and burn them, and then walk around whatever space you want to smudge. And it helps, it supposedly clears out spiritual energy, but it also, in fact, the essential oils that are in sacred herbs like sage, cedar, juniper, and sweetgrass, there are essential oils in those items that are antimicrobial. So they literally clean out microbes that may be in the air. And if you have dust mites in the air, guess what? You've got bacteria in the air, because dust mites carry bacteria. That's part of what's dust mites. They poop, and their poop has bacteria, protein, and DNA in it. So when you spray antimicrobial oils into the air, you'll downregulate some level of anything that's susceptible to it. So it's really nice. So you can get spray that has sage and cedar essential oil in it, or you can just get sage and cedar essential oil and make up a bottle of water, and then you have a spray. So I'll spray that sometimes too, and I have it at home. And also at the office, sometimes at the end of the day, I'll walk around the office and spray it. And sometimes in the past, we had somebody with a smudge stick that would burn it. But once you start burning things, then you have the issue of burning, you know, and burning, that can be great. It's especially if you happen to be outside, but burning creates smoke, and smoke can be problematic especially if you're in a workspace. I mean, smoke wouldn't be as big of a deal here. I definitely burn candles here, and I like to burn candles when I'm doing yoga as well. I don't always get to because I'm rushing to the yoga class, or I'm just doing 20 minutes. But it is really nice to have candles around. And candles are warm. They really do. They actually will warm up the room a tiny bit. When you get near a candle, it actually creates some warmth. And if you want extra warmth in your room, they're a nice thing. So any kind of rituals that are for self-care can help. So this everything shower is something that you can do. So self-compassion is great about being, it's great for being kind to yourself. And you're pausing your busy schedule. It's another restorative activity that you can do that lowers your cortisol, helps you with self-compassion and being meditative. What I really like on Friday nights, I like to do some kind of longer ritual of calming down. And if I get home before 5 o'clock, I wind up doing restorative yoga by Zoom with the local yoga studio. And if I don't get home in time for that, then I do a restorative yoga practice from, you know, that's pre-recorded on YouTube. And I find that really, really relaxing and helpful. And it transitions me from the week into the weekend. And I like to do a longer practice, you know, at least 40, 45 minutes to help to calm me down from the stress of the week and transition me into the weekend. It's very nice. So the benefits are for your mind and for your body. It can benefit you. If you don't have good hygiene, it can indicate that you're experiencing difficulties. And if you have a ritual of having an everything shower reset, especially if you say, okay, I'm going to do this on Friday evenings before my weekend starts, and you can look forward to that, and you're like, oh, if I can just make it to my everything shower, then you're going to have this lovely thing to look forward to. And if your cortisol is a bit too high, it's going to help to bring it down, and you're going to bring in hormones like oxytocin and endorphins that make you feel good. Most people can do it, taking a shower and washing. And it's easier for a lot of people to take a shower than to take a bath, because when you take a bath, you have to draw the bath. When you take a shower, you can have a warm shower in a minute or two. And then if you have everything you need in the shower already, it's really great. Maybe take some extra time to light the candle, or you if you don't want to do the candles, then have the lovely hair mask, have the body wash, have the essential oil spray, have a nice smelling face wash in the shower. And I recommend, you know, doing a couple of different body scrubs, like a body scrub that is that's somewhat at least somewhat exfoliating, and another one that's just moisturizing and that smell good to you and you find energizing. If you find one that doesn't, that's too perfumey or just not a scent profile that you care for, don't use that one. So many people are doing it already and doing it in a ritual. So if you want to create a tailored ritual for you, but you don't want to make sure that it's too routine. So you might want to change up the different essential oils you use and just make it a fun thing. So, you know, if you get body scrubs, you're going to run out of them. And so try a different one different times. Make sure that it's something that you really look forward to. Also, if you don't make it to do that, don't worry about it. What were you saying that you didn't understand about stressing to work out, right?
Right. Yeah. Don't stress out to work out.
Correct. So because working out should be fun and should be something that's stress relieving for you, and it should be something that you enjoy. Mm-hmm. So I would say don't stress out to be restorative either. If you just don't have the energy to take a shower, there are simple ways that you can calm down without doing that. You can just skip the body scrub, but make sure you have the essential oils and sprays around and just spray some essential oil. If it's appropriate to spray it on yourself, do that. You can get salves with essential oil on. Put it on your temples. By the way, the vagus nerve has the vagus nerve dermatome, which means the part of your body that the vagus nerve interacts with the skin, is right about here. It's at your temples. It's at your temples, over and behind and in front of your ears, and down your neck. So if you have a safe level of like a salve, like a lavender salve, for example, that's stirred up in olive oil and beeswax, something that's appropriate to put on your skin in those areas, or a lotion that has lavender in it, or some other kind of calming essential oil in it. You can put it right on those spots and it'll help you to feel calmer and help to activate the vagus nerve and help you to feel calmer overall. I also have put magnesium oil in those spots. The problem with magnesium oil is that magnesium oil can be irritating. So the everything shower can be really helpful, and you can spring from the everything shower to the everything. Just rest, just lie down and rest, and make sure that you feel like it's okay for you to take a break and to do something restorative. All right. So other things that you can do that are restorative, you can do great stretching. And remember that guided meditation is just, if getting into the shower becomes problematic for you, there are other things you can do that don't require a lot of effort. And the first thing is to just lie down, sit in your most comfortable chair, or just lie down on your bed, or you could lie down on the floor with a pillow and some blankets and a bolster under your knees. Again, you can spray essential oils around you. You can close your eyes. You don't have to do anything else. If you want to, you can set up a guided meditation, and there are loads of guided meditations in apps on your phone. You can also find guided meditations on YouTube or anywhere on the internet, and you just play them and listen to them, and they'll guide you through to a very peaceful place. I'm a big fan of Yoga Nidra. Yoga Nidra is progressive relaxation, where they have you progressively relax various parts of your body. So you can do that at any time. And again, don't make a big deal about it. Don't stress out to rest either. Don't stress out to work out, and don't stress out to rest. And that resting is something that can happen at any point during the day. And you can really benefit from it. And the big thing that you want to do is at times of day that that you your cortisol is being pushed to be higher than it ought to be, that you want to get that cortisol down. And the number one way to bring that cortisol down is to do deep breathing. And however you get to the deep breathing is great. You could do alternate nostril breathing. We did alternate nostril breathing in my yoga class yesterday, where you close one nostril and you inhale, and then you open that nostril, close the other nostril, and you exhale, and then you breathe in on that same side, close the nostril, and exhale. And so it's this mindful alternating nostril breathing that's really good. I do recommend, if you have any kind of congestion in your nose, before you do alternate nostril breathing, blow your nose. And the clear, because if you have congestion in your nose, and I have a little bit right now, if you have congestion in your nose, you might be doing fine breathing through your mouth, or with the compromised passages in your nose, one side versus the other. But if you are trying to breathe only out of one nostril, it's blocked enough that it's going to be hard to breathe out of that nostril. So blow your nose first. So anyway, so the everything shower, taking a bath, essential oils, things to calm you down. So this turned out to be about sleep, daylight savings time, rest, stress reduction, things that are dear to my heart. So next week, we'll get into cardiovascular. The first thing I'm going to talk about next week is how caffeine from coffee and tea can reduce body fat and diabetes risks. And so this was an interesting topic for me. So listen, that's when you listen next week. And then we'll get into all of our information about cardiovascular health, which we haven't talked about in a while. All right. So you have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also leave questions or comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org.